or scary good time. Always count on the real thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. It's frightening that we haven't been on for the last 2 weeks, but it is August 24th, 1 week from Halloween, actually.
August? You're time traveling.
God damn it. October 24th, 2016.
Marty, shit, it's August. I'm late for work.
Normally I would start over, but nah, fuck it. We're going to have it warts and all on the real thing.
Yes, fuck it.
R-E-E-L-T-H-I-N-G-M-L-R on morelikeradio.com. As always, we are joined by Chris Wetton. Chris Wetton, how are you?
Hey, hey, hey.
And Mark Nixon at your disposal, ladies and gentlemen. It is getting to be about that time where we get into kind of Oscar season.
Kind of Oscar season, and yeah. I guess so.
Yeah, November-ish.
We're starting to see a lot of those previews. We're starting to even see some of those movies being released, whether it's Birth of a Nation or, you know, I mean, sort of the early Oscar contenders are getting released.
Right. But for right now, because I know that once October's done and over with, I'm going to be kicking myself that we didn't at least do something as an homage to Halloween and horror-themed movies. And so this is our attempt at paying due respects, last rites, if you will, to horror movies. But
horror movies. But
before we do that, not horror movies.
Horror movies.
Those are what Donald Trump watches.
Oh yeah.
I bet she was grabbed. Before we move into our nights of terror, we would like to mention to you that the weekend box office winner for the weekend of October 14th was The Accountant. You know, I was going to watch this movie,
and
I'm going to tell you why, and Tina can vouch because she's in the other room right now making lunch and all that sort of thing. The only reason why I even really cared and she really cared about watching this movie was because they used Everything in Its Right Place by Radiohead. She's shaking her head yes and putting both thumbs up. You can, Chris, you can acknowledge it, right?
Yes. Okay. I can confirm that. That is happening right now.
Yeah, but I don't know. It got.
You were only going to see this movie because the trailer featured a song that's 16 years old?
Yeah. Well, I didn't, and then
you
I didn't see it.
It was good use of the song.
And then I also, read very mid to not so good reviews about it.
Right.
That it just went off the rails and everything. But that was your number one movie the weekend of October 24th. It made $24 million.
$24 million, The Accountant. Wait a minute. How much did Madea make?
Well, that was this week's.
Oh, okay.
Number one.
That's why I'm confused. Okay.
This week, for the weekend of October 21st, Tyler Booz Madea, how much do you think it made?
Well, I know that it made somewhere in the 20s, but I couldn't remember how much it was. That's why I was asking, because you were saying The Accountant, I was thinking, wait a minute, I thought it was Madea. It's somewhere in the 20s, right?
28.
$28 million for Madea. How much does the movie cost? Like fucking $900 to make?
I don't know, because he's directed 16 movies.
Can you believe that?
And this is his third number one movie.
Yeah.
And there's probably no real cost as far as making any of these.
That's what I mean. There's no real cost on making them. There's also no limit, apparently, on how many of them he can make and how often they will be successful.
You know, it'd be really great if he had started making these around like early 90s, early 2000s, and you're talking about there's no limit to it. And speaking of which, the soundtrack was produced by Low Limit Records.
No limit to it. Well, he was making Madea stuff back in the 90s. You know,
that's
I mean,
true.
This started as like a traveling stage show and stuff like that. He's been putting on this flowery grandma dress and wig and grabbing the revolver for you know, going on 25 years now or whatever it is.
Right.
Have you ever seen any of these?
No.
Never watched a Madea movie?
Not a one.
I've never watched a full Madea movie, but I've seen 5, maybe 10 minutes of them on TV, and they are not good.
They're like, what, Big Mama's House?
Yeah. I mean, basically, yes.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, I would venture to guess that Big Mama's House, what came from, you know, Martin Lawrence sort of being aware of this.
Yeah.
And trying to do a version of that before any of us knew what Madea or who Tyler Perry was.
Right. Now, we've seen Tyler Perry in other projects, other movies.
Yeah.
And he is good.
Maybe he's fine in, like, Gone Girl, right?
He
was in Gone Girl. He played the lawyer.
Yeah, and he was Alex Cross in that Alex Cross reboot
that they tried to... Threw Tyler Perry in there.
Yeah.
Didn't work. Wasn't successful. Yeah, but he was fine. Like, you know, just based on his performance in Gone Girl, I feel like anybody, like, I feel like Larry King could step into a David Fincher movie and Fincher would somehow make it work, you know? Like,
well, it is your number one.
I'm the best lawyer money can get. Ben Affleck. Oh, I don't call him Ben Affleck. What do I call it? Nick? Okay.
Jack Reacher Never Go Back was number two with 22 million, and Ouija Origin of Evil 14 million.
Ouija. How appropriate. It's kind of a risk when you name your sequel Never Go Back, and then people don't go see it.
And they don't go back.
It's like, yeah.
I didn't read good. Okay, look, I also
had review.
I also didn't read good things about Jack Reacher, but then I was also told, or I actually read something where it was also saying that the first one wasn't reviewed that well either. But I guess all the things that made the first one good, they just forgot to do it again for this one. And so,
yeah, most of the reviews said bland, monotonous,
damn it,
predictable, blah, blah, blah.
Good thing I watched the better one, I guess.
Yeah, too bad. This might put the kibosh on any further Jack Reacher movies.
The best man. The better man!
Better man!
You know, it's and we're going to move into what we were wanting to, you know, kind of have as far as, like, the crux of our show tonight. Isn't it kind of weird? I feel like, okay, Tyler Perry's Boo, A Madea Halloween, that's fine. It's not, like, a traditional Halloween movie, though. Like, I want Halloween movies to show up in October, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I do. And for a long time, it was that way. Like, yeah. we would get a Paranormal Activity movie, or we would get a Saw movie. Not that I particularly care for either one of those series. They're
right.
both fine. You know, like, the first couple from either of those series are fine.
Yeah.
But I feel like Don't Breathe and Lights Out, like, those should have been released
now.
This weekend, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, they would have killed, no pun intended. Although, I think those movies, they did okay as they were, so maybe there's something to not releasing them right on Halloween. But is this not a tradition? You mean it's not a traditional Halloween movie in the sense that it's not a horror movie?
Correct.
Yeah. It's a, you know, grandma waving a gun around, you know, and trick-or-treating and shit like that.
Yeah.
I don't even know that I saw a preview for it. I was just sort of aware that it's coming out, and it's like, do you need to see a preview for it?
No. Well, I mean, they had commercials. I've seen commercials for them. I mean, it's not my thing, but it's cool. I mean, it makes, you know, he makes money. Go and get your fucking money. Like,
yeah.
So,
I guess.
So we move on, and this is something that Chris and I had been talking about during the week. Pick five horror movies. They don't have to be the best horror movies of all time, because there's, you know, certain lists, and they're always going to have, you know, this movie and that movie and, you know, all that type of thing. But pick five horror movies that you would recommend to someone that either A, doesn't really like horror, B, could potentially, you know, not necessarily all slasher movies or all psychological thrillers or any of that sort of thing, but if you wanted, like, a good, well-rounded experience as far as horror is concerned,
right,
then these would be your selections. And truth be told, listeners of The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, is that I actually went back a little bit further, because I was looking up all this stuff. And I stopped at 1980, and Chris had pointed out, well, you're only giving yourself 36 years. And like, and then he pointed out that there were, again, more movies that
right.
were that are not only critically acclaimed, but also you know, very, very important when it comes to the
horror. A couple of pretty iconic movies
exactly.
came out before 1980.
Yeah. So that's on me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah,
and
it's
so,
on you. Fuck yeah, it is.
It's on you. Damn it, Mark.
I'm going to modify my list only slightly.
Okay.
When we're picking only five, we're going to leave some out. But the way you describe it is to say, for someone who does not like horror movies. So what that makes you think of is, you know, like, these movies have to be, yes, they're horror movies, but they also they're just good movies in and of themselves.
Correct. And let's start off with this question. Do you like horror movies?
I do like horror movies.
Okay.
The problem with horror movies is that it's a genre like comedy, which is, you know, the amount of really good ones versus the amount that are made is, you know, it's way off balance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, way more get made than get made that are actually super funny
okay.
or super scary in the case of horror movies.
Okay. And do you try to see every single horror movie?
No. Well, no.
Okay.
I feel like we're getting more horror movies than we used to. They might not get released in theaters, but if you look at, like, you know, the kind of stuff that's released on demand, and the market for horror movies is just gigantic. You can scroll through Netflix or Amazon or any of the streaming sites, and you can find hundreds and hundreds of somewhat, you know, I mean, they are independent, but there is some money behind them, horror movies that you've never heard of, starring
All right.
a bunch of actors that you've never heard of.
Right,
you
well,
know?
Yet. because
the, not yet. Yeah, but,
yeah. There's a couple of examples that I wanted to point out as we get further into this conversation. Because also I know that our mutual friend, the American Dream, Damon, he loves horror movies.
Yes,
like I think that he's probably one of the handful of people that I know. Brandon, the other person that has been on here on the Real Thing, they love horror movies. They'll watch all kinds of horror movies, no matter what.
Right.
I'm not like that.
I'm not quite like that either. Yeah. I will watch it, but I don't seek them out unless I know that it's going to be a good movie. You know, somebody that's in it or somebody that's making it is somebody that I like or someone has recommended it to me.
Yeah, yeah. It is worth your time.
Right. There's other stuff, other genres that I will go to first before I go to horror. Mainly because of what I said a couple minutes ago, which is the chances of it being a good one if you're just randomly watching a horror movie, not very high.
Gotcha. Okay. So I will let you go first.
Okay.
We can either start early or most recent movie and work backwards or forwards from there.
Well, I don't think I'd put mine in any kind of chronological order.
Okay. Well, start however you want. I've got a list of things that were kind of interesting. I'm telling you.
Okay.
For the sports nerds, there are certain years that are good in sports. The 2000 such and such was a really good year for basketball or baseball or whatever.
Right.
Similar themes in horror and this type of thing. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, so obviously some really good stuff that I love, horror movies and even some iconic ones, are going to get left off the list. But if we're going back before 1980, I have to alter my list a little bit. I have to include possibly my favorite horror movie of all time, Rosemary's Baby.
Ah, 1968.
Roman Polanski, pretty famous book before it became a movie. Mia Farrow was dating Frank Sinatra at the time. You know this? She was dating Frank Sinatra when she was making this movie.
No.
What? Actually, I think they might have been married even. And
I'm going to look this shit up.
That's true. And he, like, threatened, like, wanted her to leave the production and all this kind of stuff. Like, wanted her to leave the movie and come be with him while he was shooting some movie. She refused, and it led to them splitting.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
True story.
Did the
interwebs confirm this?
Farrow was 21 at the time when Sinatra was 51. Sinatra wanted Farrow to give up her acting career.
Yeah.
And then she accompanied Sinatra while he was shooting several films, but soon tired of doing nothing and signed on to do Rosemary's Baby.
So the reason I like Rosemary's Baby is, number one, it is a horror movie, but number two, it's got this, like... Have you ever seen it?
No.
You motherfucker.
What? Just add it to the list. Add it to the list. Finally!
Jesus Christ.
Look, you're going to be really angry at me, but I've made retribution tonight on The Real Thing on morelikeradio.com. But anyway.
And it's just got this building sense of dread in it. It's about a woman who's having a baby with her husband. And as she's, you know, carrying the child, she starts to be paranoid about some of the things that are going on around her and some of the people that are living in her building. It's filmed at the Dakota in New York City.
Okay.
The famous apartment building, like where John Lennon lived and got shot in front of.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got a real just creepy vibe throughout the whole thing. And ultimately what we learn is that the child could potentially be the child of Satan.
Ah.
It also includes a rape scene. Which is a...
Very, very ironic, given that Roman Polanski is...
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this was before that, but yes, to be fair to Roman, this was before he was a rapist of children.
Was he doing research on this before?
He was not. He was doing a little rape research.
God.
Yeah, I know. I'm conflicted about, like, you know, the fact that I like a Roman Polanski movie. However, this was pre-rape. Of a teenager in a jacuzzi or whatever it was he did.
We do not condone rape, by the way.
We do not condone rape. But Rosemary's Baby is a good movie. And you know what? It was before the rape. And it was also, by the way, before the murder of his wife. Not that that excuses the later rape that happened.
Shit. That's right. Sharon Tate with...
the Manson family. This was before that. So, but anyway, the devil rapes Mia Farrow at one point while she's all drugged up. It is a surreal movie. Truly surreal. And it has this, like, just sense of dread that seeps into the whole movie, and it has this kind of ethereal quality where you are sort of questioning the things you're seeing and what's going on. It's masterfully made. It is unbelievably good and scary movie.
See, again, I know enough about the movie to quote, "God is dead, Satan reigns. Hail Satan," and he's just like this in the air, like that.
Satan lives. God. Satan is his father, not Guy.
Oh my God.
Also stars John Cassavetes, the famous film director.
Ah, okay.
Great movie.
What else came out in 1968?
In 68, what other horror movie? Was it The Exorcist?
No,
it was a couple years later, right? Yes. 68. Christ, I don't know. What is it?
Night of the Living Dead.
Ooh. Is that on your list?
No, it is not on my list. But I did work backwards, so any movies that were, again,
they're coming for you, Barbara,
that they were all coupled together or in certain groups, that was the other one that came out in 1968.
Interesting.
So mine does not go back that far. But if we are starting backwards, and I know that some people had already mentioned this in our movie group line, truth be told, that I had not seen this movie up until 2 years ago. The Thing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Holy shit. Now, I watched it because I heard a lot about it. I heard that it was, you know, obviously John Carpenter and Kurt Russell and, God, what's the black guy's name in that movie?
Keith David,
that's right. The story behind the making of that movie interested me into watching it because I guess the sci-fi, premise of it, where this mysterious alien crash lands in the middle of the Antarctic during an expedition where these guys are just holed up, and somehow it infiltrates their base, and you're left wondering who really is part of your team, who's the alien, et cetera, et cetera. The special effects are fantastic. They still hold up even to today. But what I was getting at was that apparently the guy that was involved with running the special effects, there's a certain part in the movie where some guy's stomach splits open and chews on the other guy, and then there's nubs and bleeding and screaming everywhere. They screwed that part up when they were originally filming it. So then he stayed up like an extra 50, 60 hours to get all this rearranged again, and John Carpenter had to basically like tell his wife, listen, just, you know, whatever you got to do to not lose your mind and eat something and get some sleep or that sort of thing. I know I'm kind of, you know, taking a little bit of a liberty with the story, but that's my memory of...
You heard this story before you even saw the movie.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you saw it. Did it live up to the hype?
Yes,
of
it did.
That story?
Yes, because it is absolutely creepy and really, like, there's just stuff in there that you got to watch and understand that 1982, special effects weren't that great. I mean, what, Jaws? No. Jaws came out in 75, and Bruce the Shark was, you know, cutting-edge technology, way ahead of its time and everything else. When heads are being pulled off of shoulder blades, and then legs are growing out of said head.
All practical effects.
Yeah, there is no CGI.
There was nothing even close to CGI at this time.
Yeah, plus you got, you know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, special effects aside and all that sort of thing, it's just that uneasiness, that sense of dread, where you don't know who to trust, and the actors don't know who to trust, and so it turns into this, like, big... Who done it?
Right.
You know, like the boogeyman, but the boogeyman is somebody that's sitting right next to you.
And even as a viewer of a movie, knowing that Kurt Russell is a star, which he was a star, you think you can reasonably assume that he is not the thing. And even the movie, you know, it has that great ending that casts doubt on even that.
Right.
You know, like, you know, it's basically him and, well, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen The Thing, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's him and one other character, and there remains doubt. Did they kill it, or did they not kill it? Could one of them potentially be the thing still?
Yeah.
It's a remake, too. You know that, right?
It is, yeah. No,
it's a remake of It Came From Outer Space, yeah.
Yes, because, well, I'll get into that later, because I realized that it was a remake when I watched a movie that I saw last night, but I hadn't seen the 2013 reboot.
Yeah.
somewhere around there. It had Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I didn't see that one.
Ramona Flowers. Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, because I loved The Thing. I grew up watching it. I mean, that was one of the horror movies that I watched from a pretty early age. I was probably like 7 or 8 when I saw that movie for the first time. Because my dad was a massive fan of it, and so was my mom, for that matter.
Okay.
And so I was very curious about the idea that somebody was remaking it, and no, it just doesn't work. Joel Edgerton's in it, too, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You can kind of see what they were sort of trying to do. It sort of, like, tells the story of the other camp. Because you remember at The Thing, when they first see the dog, there is one of the other guys, that one of the Scandinavian, you know, camp, a different, completely different scientific camp.
Flying around in the helicopter.
Flying around in the helicopter and chasing after this dog with a sniper rifle trying to kill it.
Yeah.
They kind of are trying to tell that story to sort of tie it in.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just a little bit intrigued by that. I mean, that's a bright way to go about it.
Okay.
But the thing that kills the movie is...
pun intended.
Yeah. Well, it's not that scary, number one. And number two is a shitload of CGI in it.
Oh.
And it's just off-putting. Because the thing about The Thing is those incredible practical effects. I mean, like, some of the stuff, like, especially, like, in the dog cages, when they go in the dog cage scene.
It's just nightmarish.
When they walk in that room with the flamethrower and the thing, and it's just, like, it's also one of these movies that you just want to see, like, a full-length documentary about the making of it, which the DVD and Blu-ray does have, you know, where they talk about a lot of those practical effects and how they did it. It's just, like, crazy that they built this stuff that had these mechanisms that moved the way it did, because that's the only way they could do it back in the day.
Right.
And ordinarily, I think a lot of filmmakers would be like, "Ow, just do something silly, or, you know, just put a green rubber head on it, and that'll be the thing, or whatever," which is what they did with the original It Came From Outer Space. But John Carpenter was like, "Hell no, we're building it. This thing is going to... the dog's head's going to split open. What looks like a pod is going to come out. That pod's going to open up into a flower. Out of that flower is going to shoot this giant spaghetti strand that's going to slap onto the ceiling and pull itself up with its weird bony arms." And they built that thing. And it's insane that they built it. And it looks good.
Yeah.
You're watching it and it doesn't even look, you know, like something that they built. It looks like some kind of alien.
So did they mention anything about the thing that I was saying earlier about the special effects?
I think probably. I do remember that. I don't quite remember all the details of that story, but I know they go into all of the practical effects and what it took to make them. And, you know, how it was kind of... And this is the thing about it. Back in the day, a lot of times it's, as you were saying, it's like, we got one shot here.
Yeah.
Like, we built this thing... Once I split it open, that's it. It's going to destroy itself. So you better get the shot. You know, like, that's how practical effects work back in the day. Not here. You scream at this stick with a tennis ball on the end of it, and we'll just fix it in post.
All these like little like golf balls around this person's face.
Out of the bushes, there's going to be a stick with a tennis ball. You look at that stick with a tennis ball and say, "Clever girl," and then fall on your back.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The best quote. I don't know what the hell's in there, but it's weird and it's pissed off, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Chris, what is your second movie that you would recommend as far as the realthing.com, or the real thing on more like radio.com, excuse me, Halloween suggestions?
This is so hard. After we give our 5, we're going to have to do like a rapid fire of other movies.
Sure.
That you know,
we can kind of do that here. Yeah. I've got a list.
I got a list too, and it's so fucking hard for me to whittle it down. Because horror movies, you might not get one good a year, but like you said, there's some years when you had 2 good ones or even 3. And, you know, if we're going back to 1968, it's like, Jesus Christ, we're going to miss out so much. But anyway,
okay.
Moving on. My next one, one of my favorite all-time movies, David Cronenberg's The Fly. Another remake. A lot of remakes on this list. I look at my list, I see a couple other remakes on there.
Okay.
The Fly is just a brilliant movie. It's literally like one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. The single scariest movie that I ever saw as a kid that literally gave me nightmares was The Fly.
Oh, this is the first movie that I saw as a kid that I remember.
I know, you told me that story before and it cracks me up. Your mom took you to see it.
Because she thought it was the original from 1950 whatever.
Right, which is like, you know, basically just a guy. Like what I was talking about a couple minutes ago. It's a guy with a rubber head and a rubber hand. And, you know, he doesn't say anything. And he just sort of like, his wife screams when she sees him and runs back up the stairs.
It's not a magazine.
This is not that.
No.
You know, they took that premise. And this is the thing that all remakes should study. They took that premise and just amped it up. They just injected it with steroids and shot it through a transporter. And it came out all twisted and fucked up. Jeff Goldblum, David Cronenberg movie with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis. Goldblum's a scientist trying to work on a transporter, just like in the original.
Right.
Except in this one, he goes through with the fly. And the original comes out, you know, it's rubber fly head, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And this one, it's sort of insidious. Like, it's like a disease that's eating him away as he comes out.
The properties of a fly, if you will.
The properties of a fly.
At first.
At first. Well, yeah. At first, it just sort of starts to change. Like, he has some increased strength and agility and things like that. And then it starts to manifest itself in personality changes, and then it gets physical, and then it goes downhill fast.
Yeah.
And he's sort of enamored with some of his new abilities, and then he starts to realize that what's happening is just, you know, the total destruction of him as a human being, and he's becoming something else. He's no longer Seth Brundle. He's
Brundle Fly. Yeah. That monologue that he has with Gina Davis, where he's talking about insect politics.
And that's what's great about the flies. It's not just scary; it's brutal. That monologue about insect politics. You almost want to cry.
Yeah. Because
he's almost crying as he's giving it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he finishes with that killer line, no pun intended.
Yeah.
I'll hurt you if you stay.
Ugh.
Oh my God, it gives me chills just thinking about it.
Right.
Plus his dick falls off.
Well, in the official Brundle Museum that he has in the dressing cabinet.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. You don't actually see the dick fall off, but there's one jar in there. I'm pretty sure it's a dick.
Yeah. Not only that, but if you're talking about how that line's brutal, just the last 15 minutes of the movie, like, you're just crying like a fucking baby.
Well, not only are you crying, but how many of the movies that you've seen in your lifetime, the last, like, minute of the movie ends with the main character getting a shotgun blast to the head?
Yeah.
Credits.
It's all, like, slow motion, too. It's just, slime and
Brundlefly brain bits flying over there everywhere. Gina Davis is sobbing hysterically.
Yeah.
Roll the credits. It's over.
Thank you.
They don't make movies like that anymore.
No.
No.
And it won an Oscar for Best Makeup, obviously, which is the only film directed by Cronenberg to win an Oscar.
That's right. And the guy who won the Oscar for the special effects, Chris Wallace, went on to direct The Fly 2, which is absolutely terrible.
With Eric Stoltz?
Eric Stoltz. Does have a couple creepy moments in it, but is not a good movie.
Gotcha.
The dog. Remember the dog? Did you ever see The Fly 2?
No.
Pretty bad.
Is it?
Okay. I think I have it.
And then there, I forgot. John Getz in classic douchey mode.
One of the douchiest characters in the like so smug. I'm in the neighborhood. Felt a bit scummy.
Fly's good, man. That's a good pick.
I love it.
Let's see. 86 is when it came out. Yep. What else came out in 86? That would be considered a horror movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I consider it an action movie, but you got to be talking about aliens, right?
Mm-hmm. There's that. Yeah. There's that. There's another movie that you really like that came out in 86.
What the hell? Benji the Hunted?
Night of the Creeps.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. That's the thing about horror movies is there's so many subgenres, you know? Like, and Night of the Creeps, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that to somebody who doesn't like horror movies, because that's, like, not going to, you know, The Fly is something they can watch and maybe enjoy, and so is The Thing or something like that.
Yeah,
Night of the Creeps is, like, for horror fans, and especially for fans of horror movies from the 80s, because it's a zombie movie. It's a slasher, like, guts and gore, disgusting kind of movie, gross-out movie, but it's also a comedy. Like, it's really funny.
Yeah, I also forgot to mention, when we were talking about we were talking about The Thing in 1982, the other horror movie that came out that year was, Poltergeist.
Ooh, another good one.
Uh-huh.
God.
But 86, all right, so we were talking about The Fly, we're talking about Aliens, Night of the Creeps. Little Shop of Horrors?
My kids just watched that the other day, by the way.
Okay.
Did not like it.
Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah, you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's a Michael Rooker.
And The Hitcher.
Ooh.
Right?
I love The Hitcher. Another movie that unsuccessfully they attempted to remake.
That's right.
Yeah. What's his name?
Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, and Pony Boy. C. Thomas Howell.
No, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Great movie. So creepy, that movie. Like, just, like, almost no talking in a lot of the scary scenes. Just, like, weird, creepy shit of them, you know, like, C. Thomas Howell, like, eating the french fries, looking out the window.
Yeah.
Picks one up, and it's a finger.
Ugh.
Hell yeah.
Here's my second one. Okay. Would this be considered a horror movie? Seven.
I think so.
Okay. Cause,
I think so.
Okay, because my fallback was going to be The Burbs.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to throw some comedy in there, but Seven's my second pick because it has definitely elements of a thriller and a, you know, crime procedural. It's got Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, and it's been 20 years, so if you don't know, that it doesn't have Kevin Spacey, which he had asked not to be credited.
Yeah.
As far as the marketing was concerned, because I guess David Fincher was afraid that it was going to be let out when it came out in 95, but I like movies that are going to fuck me up.
Yeah.
And this movie fucked me up to the point where you don't realize it until after you've gone back for a second viewing, but you don't see anybody die.
No.
You see the aftermath of what's happened, and it's obviously based on the seven deadly sins, and they're trying to find the killer before he, you know, takes his victims. And it's 1 week before Somerset, played by Morgan Freeman, is retiring, and he's being replaced by Mills, this up-and-coming hotshot rookie cop.
From a small town, moved to the big city.
Yeah. The way that it's shot and how, like, physically shot on film looks decayed and gross, right. And like an extra, like, you know, bunch of grime and everything else.
Yeah, sick and grainy. Like, you want to wash your hands after you touch anything on the shot.
You know? Yeah. And, you know, truth be told, I remember seeing it when it came out in 95, and I didn't expect the twist that had occurred or anything.
Nobody
else.
Nobody did.
Yeah,
Saw that coming. It doesn't get mentioned enough in the great twists of movies.
It's, yeah,
like people always talk about The Sixth Sense and The Usual Suspects and stuff like that.
Yeah,
The Seven, you knew something was coming, but that twist does not get mentioned enough. The fact that he, John Doe, actually becomes one of the murders.
Right,
and I think people misunderstand that sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like he is being killed for his sin,
right,
which is envy. And he makes the cop into, spoiler alert, he makes Mills into the killer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Like, one of the great twist endings of all time.
And played, I mean, I would honestly think that it's probably one of Brad Pitt's better acting roles.
Pitt and Morgan Freeman. Because Morgan Freeman has sort of become kind of a joke these days, in my opinion. Like,
yeah.
When was the last time you saw Morgan Freeman in something where he actually gave a great performance? I might argue that it's Seven, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he was great in Batman or whatever, but he's pretty much doing the same thing that he did in Bruce Almighty or whatever, you know? Like,
yeah,
he's
yeah, yeah.
kind of playing the same part. But not in Seven. Like, he has some really incredible moments. But back to what you were saying, which is Brad Pitt. Yeah, absolutely. One of his best performances ever. And he's so good in it. He completely understood everything that that character was going through.
Yeah.
And I think David Fincher realized it too, because he cast him in, like, what, 4 other movies? Something like that?
Yeah, that, Benjamin Button, Fight Club, and...
Or maybe it's just 3.
Just the 3. Yeah, not to mention the fact, you know, I know, obviously, Kevin Spacey won an Oscar for American Beauty and all that sort of thing.
Well, he won an Oscar this same year for The Usual Suspects.
That's right, that's right.
The Usual Suspects, 7, and Swimming with Sharks all came out in the same year.
Shit, and 95.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, you know, it's kind of like the thing where if you've got a really talented actor that's going to be on screen for no more than 10, 15 minutes, like Robert De Niro for... The Untouchables as Al Capone,
right,
or
right.
Heath Ledger as the Joker. Like, you've got the smarmiest, like, most intelligent person persona that you could have with Spacey during
right.
that drive over to God knows where we're going. Just,
right.
just fucking, what is it? Powerline City.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, just fucking dread and like, what the fuck is going to happen? Like, all this terrible shit. What do you got? Dead dog.
I didn't do that.
So,
but it's also one of those movies that changes up the locale for the finale, which is always like weirdly effective. That, you know, the entire movie's dark, you don't see the sun, and then finally for the, you know, crescendo of the story, you're all of a sudden you're out in broad daylight. Everything's right out in the open in this gigantic field.
Yeah.
The entire movie feels so suffocating up until the end of the movie where you're finally getting some answers and it's out in this well-lit gigantic field, and it adds an almost creepier feeling than you felt in the city, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's no longer raining like it was in the rest of the movie. I love Seven. And it was the movie that really introduced us to David Fincher. Everyone had kind of written him off after Alien 3.
Well, I think he kind of wrote himself off
after
Alien 3.
I think he did, yeah, so. Yeah. And, you know, you could argue that probably rightfully so. There were mistakes were made in the making of that movie. So.
I'll also tell you what, too, and we'll move on to yours on the real thing on morelikeradio.com, is that it would be very, very easy to do something along the lines of the plot and fuck it up.
Yeah.
But if you got a good cast and you've got good directors and then you've got a good script, Andrew Kevin Walker ended up going to do, you know, a couple of other projects. I know he directed 8mm.
Yes.
Just based solely on this, and then he did a couple of other projects.
Well, Schumacher directed 8mm, but he wrote it.
Right.
He also wrote Sleepy Hollow, I think.
Yeah.
A couple others. You see his name pop up from time to time. I've heard in the past that the script had quite a few changes made to it once Fincher took over, and I think they're for the better. Like, there was a lot of things that were changed, which is fine. It is still, like, one of the best movies of the 90s, top 10 movies of the 90s, easily for me.
Yeah, for sure. What do you got?
Next movie on my list? I gotta pull it up here. Well, I'm gonna jump backwards a little bit.
Okay.
And go back to 1980, I believe.
Okay.
Off the top of my head. Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Ugh. Yeah.
This is a controversial pick, probably, because I think a lot of people didn't like the movie because they had read the book beforehand. And I understand that.
Okay.
I read the book years after I saw the movie, so I didn't feel that way. I mean, I saw the movie as a kid. I was probably 10 or 12 or something like that.
Is it too long?
I do think that it is a little bit too long, but that's kind of the nature of a Kubrick movie. And it's kind of, if you ask Kubrick to make a horror movie, you know that he's going to want to build, you know, this sense, this feeling throughout it. It's not just going to be shock scares and jump scares and stuff like that. I do think it's longish. I don't think it's too long.
Well, maybe it works in its favor because of, you know, the themes of isolationism and, you know, you're kind of stuck in this hotel with nothing but your mind, and that's kind of the whole point of, you know, what happens with Jack Nicholson and his family, so.
If it's too long, I think it's probably because he was trying to add stuff in there that was sort of from the book to stay true to the book, and ultimately he probably didn't even need to do those things, which would have alienated some people even worse.
Okay.
But you either have to stick to that book 100% or you have to just do your own thing. And so I think some of the stuff that he did eventually try to add in, which is like the scene of, you know, Nicholson talking to the bartender and that whole conversation.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it feels off. It doesn't feel like it belongs there or something like that. I think he was trying to do something there that didn't totally work out. Having said that, the movie works mostly because of Kubrick and Nicholson. And the two of them working together was just this incredible combination. I know Stephen King famously did not care for the remake, did not care for the casting of Jack Nicholson.
Why?
I think that he thought, maybe it wasn't that he didn't care for the casting of Jack Nicholson, but he didn't care for the performance because he felt like Nicholson was a little bit too crazy from the beginning.
Okay.
Which, and, you know, what's his name? Jack Torrance was sort of meant to go mad as the story goes along, and the hotel sort of reveals what was inside of him. You know, he's an abuser of his child and an alcoholic and all these kind of things.
Now, did you ever see the straight to television, the ABC?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Steven Weber or whatever it was.
Yeah. The guy from that Wing show.
Yeah, and that's and Rebecca De Mornay, and that's a perfect example of, you know, you try and stay too close to the book. And that doesn't quite work out so well either sometimes, you know? When you've got the maze outside had all these animals in it, which in the book come to life and they're sort of threatening to, you know, attack and all this kind of stuff. Like hedge maze animals coming to life.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that back in 1980? I mean, I guess you could do it with practical effects, as we were talking about a little while ago with John Carpenter, but I think that Kubrick was smart to leave it out. When we did finally see it in the TV movie, it was ridiculous. And I gotta be honest, when I read it in the book, it was one of the ridiculous things to me.
Yeah.
The movie also has some weird notes, which is like Scatman Crothers, you know?
I remember I remember the video that our friend Jamie always showed whenever I was
behind
living.
The scenes.
Yeah, and they were talking about the little kid that he was acting with. Hey, Scatman, what'd you think about the experience with this child? It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. Tears start streaming down his face.
There were tears of joy.
And as awkward as that interview on the behind the scenes for the movie is, he's equally awkward in the movie itself. Like, weird, like, 3-minute shot of him driving the snowmobile and stuff like that. There's some stuff that doesn't work. And it sounds like, well, Chris, why the hell did you pick that movie? Well, if you sit down and watch it, it's scary as shit. I mean, it really does have this, like, creepy haunted mansion kind of vibe to it, which I love. And I know a lot of people feel the same way.
Have you ever watched the documentary Room 222?
Yes. 223.
223. Thought, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Or 321, some shit. Anyway, yes, I did see that. And, you know...
237, excuse me.
237, that's what it is. 37. In a row. It's one of those things where I'm not a conspiracy theory guy at all. I like that people have those theories and I like hearing about them, but okay. I just don't think that it was about the moon landing or the Native Americans. I think people sort of make those connections and they project onto the movie what they want. And that's great, you know, yeah. I mean, people can project those things. But I think it was just a, you know, it was a fucking haunted house movie. I think that's what Kubrick was doing. I do think he always had ulterior motives in mind when he made movies. So putting a spaceship on the kid's sweater, you know, I mean, that is him trying to get some kind of message out there. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but
right.
I don't think the entire movie is about faking the moon landing, you know.
Huh. What else came out in 1980? Same year that The Shining came out.
I did. Woohoo!
That's not a horror movie, Chris. That is, yeah. That is a gift from Space Cake.
You don't think it's a horror movie. I'll show you the video next time you come over to my house.
Jesus Christ. Friday the 13th. Not that same year.
Nice.
Go figure.
Jason. So. Crystal Lake. Actually, no Jason in that one. Well, there is Jason.
Yeah. All right. Let me move into my pick. And I'm going to go with... Actually, I know that you like this movie because Josh was talking about it. Josh, our other guest that used to... That was imparting his words of wisdom.
A.K.A. Baber.
That's right.
Or a Zoolander would say, K.K.K. Baber.
On The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. And this came out in 2001. It has Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey, and it's Frailty.
Ooh, hell yeah.
Yeah, and this movie fucked me up because I don't know if you guys have ever seen this movie, but I highly encourage you to because...
Underrated.
Not only is it Bill Paxton's directorial debut, and it deals with two boys and their religious dad, and apparently their dad keeps... getting called by God to kill people because he thinks that they're demons.
Right.
McConaughey. McConaughey, that's right.
And Powers Booth, if that's of any interest to anyone. Curly Bill from Tombstone.
Yeah, and he's a hell of a bad guy, but in this particular movie, he's... Yeah,
it's kind of a gray area.
Yeah. So
this movie caught me by surprise because, you know... I've never been a huge fan of Paxton. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I don't hate him. Like, something. My wife hates Bill Paxton. Like,
why?
I don't know. She just can't stand his, like, kind of aw shucks delivery, you know? Like, he's kind of a good old boy, and, well, they're fucking animals, man. How the fuck do you fucking mean they got the power? You know, she's just not crazy about that way. Sort of. He kind of delivers every line exactly the same way, and that kind of, like... country hick sing-songy sort of way.
Right.
Doesn't bother me, but it bothers her, and I've heard other people say the same thing. He doesn't exactly do that in this movie, and he is creepy as shit.
He's very creepy. This whole movie's creepy. Dealing with God and religion as a whole is it's very off-putting to
me. Well, it is to me, too. When people are motivated by that, and they take that idea in this movie to the extreme.
Right, especially where we live, because we're basically in the Bible Belt of Florida, which is probably the strongest Bible Belt in the United States of America, if you want to be comparison's sake.
It's like America's cock ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going through the list of horror movies backwards from this year, and I was like, man, I completely forgot about that. Right. I've only seen it once. You know, typically what I would say is a good horror movie is that if it, you know, like you almost kind of have to force yourself to watch it a second time, then it's a good horror movie.
Right.
Or it's a good horror episode, this or that.
So, like, Paxton, like, gets messages from God that he needs to start killing demons, people that are... actually demons masquerading as people on the earth, and God is telling him to execute these people. He literally gets a list of people that he's supposed to go out and, you know, kidnap them at the Piggly Wiggly and go home and kill them with an axe and bury them in the backyard.
And the two brothers, one of the boys is all about it. Right. I'm going to help my daddy out. And the other kid's like, what the hell are we talking about? Like, you're crazy. I'm going to go tell the cops.
And then the movie sort of goes on from there. But it's also got some mystery elements in it, too, because there's some things that we don't fully understand at the beginning of the movie. And they sort of play out as one of the brothers, as a full-grown man, is telling this story to a police officer, played by Powers Booth.
Right.
So it's got a lot of flashback action going on, too. So good.
Yeah.
So creepy. I didn't even think about this movie when I was making my list, but that's a great inclusion.
Yeah. Also, that came out 2001. The other movie that came out in 2001 that was of note, not as good, obviously, The Mothman Prophecies.
Mm, I like Mothman Prophecies.
That's all right, but nothing like this.
And
I'm just mentioning right now, the real thing on morelikeradio.com, Hippo Juice will be coming up next, but seeing as how we're completely vested in this, we will be going over time, so I will let you guys know when that happens. We're kind of at the 45-minute mark. Chris, what is your next pick?
What are we on
four?
We're on four. Okay. Alien. The original Ridley Scott Alien.
Yeah. You're going old school with these.
Yeah, you know, especially once we opened it up prior to 1980, it was kind of like, you know, I can't not put Alien on there.
Yeah.
Also, again, we'll fire through some that we love at the end of our top five, but I'm thinking of movies that I could recommend to someone who's saying, I don't like horror movies.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. That's good.
You know, this is kind of a sort of horror movie that rarely gets made anymore, which is there's very little talking in it, and there's very few characters. They're just thrust into a situation that they don't understand, and it sort of spirals out of control from there.
Okay.
I remember watching it as a kid, my dad saying, you know, at the beginning of it, like, all right, well, only one of these characters is going to be alive at the end of the movie. You know?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, trying to pick which one it was. I failed miserably, I'm sure. But and the movie is just that. I mean, it's just these guys trying to take on this unstoppable force. They just completely don't understand it. And it had so many things about it that were new at the time, which is, you know, space movies at the time, everything was like flashing lights and Star Trek and, you know, bright colors. Yeah. This was not like that. It was like space truckers, you know.
Also very... I don't want to say the word happy, but very inviting. Like, hey, yeah. I want to go to space.
Right.
I want to go to space.
Oh, it's all ray guns and Buzz Lightyear.
Super cool.
Yeah. You know, Roy Jetson's car and stuff like that, you know?
Right.
And this was like, ugh. And even the tagline of the movie was, in space, no one can hear you scream.
Which is scientifically true.
Scientifically true. And, you know, the acid for blood, and then they get H.R. Giger to design this creature that was just totally unlike anything else that had been on, you know, in horror movies, and it looked like something that could be real, like the xenomorph, like, holy shit,
yeah,
it's got a little mouth inside of its mouth. get back inside of me, little mouth. And then, you know, out of nowhere you get the Ash droid scene. It's like, what the fuck? Like, right, you're already fucked up by this movie as you're watching it. It's like there's an alien running around and everybody's dying. All of a sudden she hits Ash in the head and his head pops off and there's milk spewing all over the place.
Yeah.
Everything about this movie was so ahead of its time and so fantastic. Masterfully done by Ridley Scott, who I think had only made one movie before this, called like The Duelists or something like that.
Well, let's find out.
And It was just an instant classic, you know? I mean, everybody went to see it, and it was just an instant classic.
You would be correct.
Yeah. I mean, he was making, like, commercials and stuff like that. And
yeah.
He made one movie called The Duelist, I think, with Harvey Keitel. And this movie just came out of nowhere. I still can watch this movie, like, once a year. I can go, and then it will immediately lead me into all the sequels, which I don't like as much as the original, but I like all of them to varying degrees.
Yeah.
It's just a classic.
This is the thing that I was also kind of, you know... I get it. This is with any movie, though. This is with any genre that you have, is that if you've got something that you just completely knocked that out of the park, like Alien, for example.
Yes.
Or Blair Witch.
Yes.
Or Halloween. Or Nightmare on Elm Street. Or, you know, any of those types of movies. And then they got, like, 7, 10, 12 sequels that just completely dilute. Does that factor in at all when you're watching this movie? Or?
Does not dilute the original.
Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, it dilutes... You know, the sequels, you get diminishing returns. And like I said, I like all the sequels to varying degrees. I like all the sequels to many of those movies you just named to varying degrees. Some of them I don't like at all.
Yeah.
But it never makes me feel like the first one is somehow less worthy, ever. Gotcha. Especially if you're actually, maybe if I'm thinking about it, but if you sit down and watch Alien,
like you're not watching all seven movies.
You ain't thinking about Ron Perlman in the fourth movie.
Like, right.
You're just into that movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you are thinking about those sequels, then the original probably wasn't that good to begin with.
Man, what a fucking start for Ridley Scott, by the way. Just off subject. The Duelist, which you mentioned, then Alien, then he did Blade Runner, yep. Then he did the commercial for the Apple, the 1984 Apple right. Macintosh one that played during the Super Bowl, then he did Legend. I mean, you know.
I know.
So.
Yeah, Ridley Scott, crazy, crazy career he's had. He's still fucking making movies, and they're still hits. Unbelievable. He's like 80 years old.
Yeah. All right. My next pick came out in... I gotta look this up. Mid-aughts. 2005.
Mid-aughts.
And it was directed by the guy that did... You ever see Dog Soldiers?
Neil Marshall?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Descent.
Ooh, yeah.
No. Yeah.
It's funny. I was thinking about this movie when I was saying that they don't make movies like Alien anymore. It's one of the movies that popped in my head because it's similar.
Yeah, it's very British.
Yeah.
And it deals with six women who are spelunking in just some unmapped cave system and are being hunted by... I have no idea what the fuck they're being hunted by.
Like weird, like, subterranean mole man creatures.
Like chuds or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all I know is that there's just a lot of, you know, obvious tension that goes into, you know, the setup, and everything seems to be okay, and then they start arguing with each other, but all-female cast, too.
All-female cast, and this movie is positively claustrophobic. Like... It probably would have been, could have been a scary movie without the chuds.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? You could have made a scary movie just about the spelunking.
Yeah.
And then you throw in, like, the cannibalistic mole man, and they're, like, sightless, and, you know, I mean, they've got these crazy teeth, and this movie scared the shit out of my wife when she saw it. Like, so much so that I feel like I bought the movie and, like, she, like, refused to watch it
right.
on DVD.
Now, is it the DVD where it's got all the yeah. women together and they're all, like, one of them screaming in the air and the other ones are, you know, kind of all in a shape of a skull.
Skull, yeah. It's, like, reminiscent of the Silence of the Lambs poster.
Yeah, there's that, and then just every shot that, or not every shot, every still that they've taken from the movie is either them screaming or them just completely drenched in blood.
Yeah, because that's the entire movie. And yes. That makes it sound bad, but it's actually really, really effective.
Like, right, right, right.
Like, I wouldn't necessarily say that this is a great movie.
No.
But in terms of a horror movie watching experience that is effective, it is 100% effective.
Yeah, because it deals with, you know, real-life shit like claustrophobia, and that'll freak some people out. I know that's for
real-life
sure.
shit like underground cannibalistic mole man.
Ugh.
Mm. We all know that's going on.
That's right. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
Yeah, Chud.
That's right.
Good movie.
This was
a great... Descent, by the way, before we move on, was... Did you see it in the theater?
Yes, I did.
There's something about... Like, this is the classic horror movie theater experience.
Yes.
Like, people were silent in this movie. You go see the newest Friday the 13th movie, or the new Halloween movie, or any of these sequels that we were sort of talking about a couple minutes ago.
Right.
The theater's going to be packed. You know, and people want to see Friday the 13th Part 11 or whatever it is.
Right.
But they're not sort of wrapped the way that they are when they went and saw Neil Marshall's The Descent.
Like, yeah.
I remember that movie was silent. Like, people were completely locked into it, you know? Like,
I'm sure there were a lot of bruises that were going on with, like, girlfriends' arms and guys like, you know, baby, you gotta let... I gotta get my...
Vascular trauma from, like, squeezing, like,
going into work the next day.
A lot of blood being cut off.
And then they fucking just scream their heads off whenever all this shit happened. And
great movie-watching experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So... What is your last pick, Chris? What do you got?
My last official pick is the aforementioned The Silence of the Lambs.
Ah, okay.
Again, kind of like Seven, which is, I suppose some people could not call it a horror movie. However, it's frequently referred to as the only horror movie that ever won the Best Picture at the Oscars. It's
correct.
Frequently referred to that way. And I do consider it and Seven to be a horror. I mean, yeah, you could technically call them a thriller. But you can technically call them horror movies, too. I mean, one of the main characters does rip off someone's face and wear it as his own face, you know? Like, and there's plenty of other you know, grody shit happening too. So,
like, oh yeah, very early on, I might add too.
Yeah, very early on. This movie, again, famous book before it became a movie, and this is maybe one of the best examples of a book being perfectly turned into a movie.
Okay.
And I've never read it, by the way, but both my parents did. I remember it because they both wanted to go see it. And again, took me to see it at 10 or 11 years old or whatever it was.
Man, what is...
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
What the hell is going on with your parents?
I know. Well, they never really, you know, limited what we were allowed to see. And I don't think I had any long-term effects. You know, I mean, I killed 3 or 4 prostitutes, but, like, you know, who hasn't? Who among us hasn't?
Now, did before you saw... Well, actually, I'm sorry, I take it back. But let me ask you, because your parents are apparently, you know, getting you all up to snuff.
Literally.
Did you see Manhunter before or after
No,
this?
I saw Manhunter years later.
Okay.
And I don't think many people that were, like, I don't think that, first of all, Manhunter was based on a book called Red Dragon. So, and that came out before Silence of the Lambs. I don't think that that first book was as big a hit as Silence of the Lambs was. Silence of the Lambs was a successful book. Like,
right.
Like, people were well aware of it when that movie came out. I'm not sure that Manhunter... The same was true of the Red Dragon book.
Okay.
But either way, I saw Manhunter years later. And Manhunter's good. It's a good movie. But it's not as good. It gets a lot of credit for being, oh, people, you know, like movie hipsters like to be like, yeah, fucking Manhunter's better than Silence of the Lambs, man. It's so much better. Brian Cox was a better Hannibal Lecter. You know, I like Brian Cox. I like Manhunter. Yeah. No.
No.
Sorry. No.
No.
And I like Michael Mann. No. Silence of the Lambs is a perfect, perfect adaptation of that book. And, you know, Jonathan Demme, who had made, I think, like, Married to the Mob and a couple of other movies.
Something Wild?
Something Wild, which was a really good movie, actually. But neither of those movies are, they're both sort of kind of comedies. They're not thrillers. So it didn't even make sense that Jonathan Demme was making this movie. But he was perfect. You know, he utilized that first-person shot that he has always utilized, which is the camera directly in front of this actor's face, you know, them looking directly into the camera.
Right.
And Clarice does it quite a few times when she's looking at a computer or something like that, or some files. Of course, Hannibal Lecter does it when he's talking to Clarice, and it is so effective in this format.
Yeah.
Jonathan Demme's not had a ton of success ever since then. I mean, he did Philadelphia and Beloved, and, you know, I liked his Manchurian Candidate remake, but he never quite was as successful as he was making The Silence of the Lambs. I mean, when you're in that room with Clarice Starling and Hannibal Lecter, like, you are completely caught up in that conversation between the two of them. It's not even about the murders anymore. It's about him getting inside her head.
Yeah. Which she was warned about.
Which she was warned about. Yeah. Literally said, like, don't let Hannibal Lecter inside your head.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she's not even, you know, she's not even an FBI agent at that point. Like, you know, she's a trainee. The movie is so effective, so scary, and absolutely hilarious. And Hopkins, who had been around for years and years, you know, great British actor, this was the movie that really kind of introduced him fully to American audiences. He was in a movie called Magic. He'd been in a lot of movies. I mean, he was in The Elephant Man, of course, and things like that. But this was the first time that he became a star. And, of course, the movie won Best Picture. Demme won Best Director, Best Writer. She won Best Actress. Yeah, Hopkins won Best Actor. It swept.
Yeah. Clean sweep, in fact.
Last time that a movie swept the Oscars, I think.
Ah, shit.
Like that.
Now, did you see... You saw Hannibal.
I saw Hannibal, and I saw Red Dragon, which is the Manhunter remake.
I liked Red Dragon.
I like Red Dragon, too. I mean, you know, I'm capable of enjoying Manhunter and Red Dragon. You know what I mean? It's a fucking remake, and it's got a lot of star power in it. Ed Norton, Ralph Fiennes, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Harvey Keitel?
Harvey Keitel.
I get it confused now because it's like, wait, was he in the original? No, that was Dennis Farina.
Yeah.
No, but it was good. You know, I mean, I liked the remake. Wasn't the remake directed by some fucking chode, like McGee or somebody like that?
Hold on.
Or Ratner? Was it Ratner?
It was Brett the Rat Ratner. You are absolutely right.
God.
Pulled that one out of your ass.
God, I just like... woke up in a cold sweat, realizing that I'd said that I liked a Brett Ratner movie.
Ah, shit.
Well, nah, you know what? Ratner pulled it off that time. I don't know what happened, but he did.
I mean, as long as we're talking about the horror movie.
It's hard to fuck up when you got Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ralph Fiennes and Ed Norton in your movie, but
yeah.
You know, if anybody could do it, it would be Ratner.
I mean, as long as you brought up the horror movies of 2002, do you know what else came out in 2002? This is what
Was Red Dragon 2002?
Yes, it was.
What else came out in 2002? Horror movie?
Mm-hmm. Dog Soldiers, aforementioned Dog Soldiers did.
By the way, before we get into that, you know, Neil Marshall, you know what else he directed quite a bit of?
No.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, fuck, is that him? Yep. Holy son of a bitch.
As a matter of fact, he might be the one who directed...
The last episode of Westworld that I just saw, the third episode.
Yeah, he's directed a lot of HBO shows, but I think he might have directed the one where Ramsay Snow gets killed, that episode.
Battle of the Bastards?
Battle of the Bastards. That might have been Neil Marshall.
He also directed the one that went direct to the theater, The Watchers on the Wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, basically...
Which is why I think they got him to do Battle of the Bastards, because he'd sort of done the big action pieces before.
Fuck yeah, that's the same guy?
Neil Marshall, yeah.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Sorry, 2002, other horror movie that came out. I don't know, what is it?
The Ring.
Oh, yeah, that was a good movie.
28 Days Later.
Ooh, yeah. Better movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My final pick, and I was trying really hard to go according to, like, decades, for example. So I had The Thing, I got Seven, I got Frailty, you know, Descent.
Oh, yeah, okay, I didn't even notice that.
So
you're going to the teens now.
Teens right now. And, you know, honestly, like, I'm not a big horror movie fan, simply because of the fact that gore and violence don't scare me, or they're not off-putting. Yeah. But I don't want to go, like, Saw, for example. Saw is really fucked up and scary and everything else, but then when it becomes torture porn, like, sure. I'm out. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't care anymore.
This movie came out in 2014. Has no gore at all whatsoever. PG-13, I think. It totally is. Scared the shit out of me. The Babadook.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Babadook.
And apparently this one is directed by... a lady, Jennifer Kent, in her directorial debut, and it was widely praised. It's Australian. It deals with a lot of issues that are not needing a monster or a boogeyman or any of that type of thing. A single mom, and the husband's died, and she's dealing with this kid that is just a holy terror, but not in the holy terror like, you know, The Omen or... you know, Pet Cemetery or any of that type of thing. He's just got issues. You know, I know plenty of parents. You know plenty of parents that have got kids that have got issues. And so they are trying to deal with that at school and at home. She's just kind of a nervous wreck because she's not getting any sleep. And so then they find this book about this boogeyman, and he's called the Babadook. And it just goes from there. And I don't want to get into...
like, well, the movie is about more than just a monster. As,
correct.
As many of the great horror movies are, this movie has quite a bit more to it. And again, talk about effective.
Yeah.
This movie is so scary. This is one of those movies you got to listen to loud. Because there's a lot going... there's a lot... really a lot of creative use of sound in this movie.
Yes.
A lot of creaking and moaning and stuff. And it sounds like it's just, we're talking about a haunted house here. But no, it's utilized in an effective way that works for the story. One of the best child performances I've ever seen. Only because I hated him so much. The kid.
No,
you know?
He's not likable at all.
No, he's not likable. He's meant to be not likable. And it works. Like, they nailed it. This kid nailed it. Because it's really off-putting. And leads into the mother's performance, which is the key to the entire movie.
Yeah.
She steals the entire movie with her unbelievably genuine, terrifying performance.
Yeah, and before this, she had been in a couple things. Oh, shit, she was in The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions, really? And she was in Girl with the Pearl Earring? It's weird. But nothing like this. She wasn't, like, the lead in any of this type of thing.
I mean, this movie is her shoulder. Like, she's in every scene of the movie.
Correct. Yeah, and so if I were going to suggest a movie that is, like you and I have been saying, equally terrifying, there is no gore to mention at all. It's just a lot of stuff that just gets in your head. Plus, I think what is also very good about this movie is that it's got the kind of like the sing-songy, you know, like 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you.
Oh,
three,
yeah.
Four. Like
kind of a nursery rhyme.
They got the best, you know, like Aesop's Fables, for example. It's always got, you know, that kind of element involved with this particular movie. Plus,
yeah.
Plus Babadook is just sounds, ugh.
Yeah, Babadook. Yeah. No, it's creepy as shit.
Yeah.
Again, my wife, like, I don't think I can do this. Like, watching it with, like, her hands over her face the entire time. By the way, Essie Davis from the Babadook, do you know what else she was in more recently?
I do not.
Game of Thrones.
Son of a bitch.
Lady Crane. She was the actress last season.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yep.
If
she's the actress that was playing Cersei with the traveling show of actors and stuff and so forth. The one that
Arya
was supposed to, was supposed to kill and ultimately did not. That one. Watch out for that one.
Holy shit. If you've stayed with us for this long, thank you so much. We're actually over time. But we're going to continue on with the real thing on morelikeradio.com. So we appreciate your patronage. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, because, Chris, what is your final pick?
I thought that was my final pick.
Was it?
I think I did five.
You're five? You did five?
I think so.
Okay. Well, here we go.
I mean, I have more movies I'll power through, but I always...
Well, yeah. Let's power through.
Like an 8-hour show.
What do you got?
just the other ones that didn't quite make the top five, not because they don't make it there, but I don't know. Just tough to make five.
Okay.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, again a remake, talking about the Philip Kaufman one with Donald Sutherland and Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. Okay.
So good. Love that movie. Hellraiser. Now again, probably can't recommend this to someone who does not like horror movies.
Not at all.
But Hellraiser is really, really effective. Like that, I don't know, there's something that's so terrifying about Frank before he's completely rebuilt, you know, crawling across the floor trying to drink up the blood and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But this movie also is great if you'd seen it back in the day. It's great for just watching and shitting on these days because it's so ridiculous, you know, like it's so preposterous, like some of the choices that were made.
One of my alternates would have been Event Horizon.
I think we saw that movie together.
Yes, we did.
We went to Brandon and saw that movie.
Yeah, and it's still fucked up.
Yeah.
It's really screwed up.
Oh, my God.
Anything dealing with going to hell and then coming back and...
It's kind of got a cult following, too. But you know, I've never watched Event Horizon since I saw it in the theater.
Really?
I've often thought about watching it because I see it's on Netflix and, you know, I've, like, passed by and, like, I remember liking it, you know?
Yeah.
Never gone back and watched
it. Should watch it again.
Yeah, it holds up.
Where we're going, you don't need eyes to see. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, fucking Sam Neill just being, like, super uber creepy. And...
We need more Sam Neill.
We do need more Sam Neill.
In the Mouth of Madness?
Yeah. Oh, shit. I forgot about that movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
Another Carpenter movie.
Let's go with groupings, too, since we're talking about 2009. Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, yeah.
Orphan. Did you ever see The Loved Ones?
We went and saw Drag Me to Hell together, too.
That's right.
Orphan, yeah, I went and saw Orphan. Yeah, I liked it. Same guy that made The Shallows.
Uh-huh. The Loved Ones?
Loved Ones? What is The Loved Ones?
You should watch that.
What is that?
It's an Australian movie about some girl...
Who is that?
I can't remember what that was.
Loved Ones. Australian girl.
She's an Australian girl that really wants to go to prom by any means necessary. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Huh. Interesting.
And in 2009, The Fourth Kind. I don't like alien movies.
No?
And that was introduced by Tina over there, and it's got Mia Jovovich, and yeah, that movie, like, found footage.
I never watched it. I saw like, the preview for it, and never watched it.
That, well, apparently we got a movie that you're going to borrow.
Oh, she's you have it? Oh, I'll borrow it then.
Yeah. And then 10 years earlier... Blair Witch Project, which we've talked about,
but it does bear repeating. Like, that was ahead of its time.
Stir of Echoes.
Ooh, yeah, I like Stir of Echoes.
Audition.
Yes.
And, just for kicks, Idle Hands.
Idle Hands is just funny.
Yeah.
Like, I love, like, this is one of those underrated 2000s movies. Okay, see, what else was on my list? The original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
And I love all the sequels, by the way. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, can't leave that off of there. Again, like, not for people that don't like horror movies necessarily, but if we're talking about the greatest horror movies of all time, that one just works. It just does.
1974.
Yeah.
What else came out in 1974? Not a horror movie, but along the same line. Young Frankenstein.
Oh, I actually thought about Young Frankenstein earlier when you said the word grouping. Nice, grouping. Jaws,
yeah.
Technically a fucking horror movie, man. Scary. But you don't think about it as a horror movie anymore.
Yeah, since you brought up Jaws, two movies that came out that same year that...
76?
75.
75.
Rocky Horror, by the way, also came out in 75. But two movies that came out within that time were later used by Tarantino for his foray into horror and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. One of which is Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS, because he turned it into the thing that was the commercial for the right. Grindhouse.
Yeah, well, that was Rob Zombie, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. So. With Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
God, I want to see that movie made.
I know.
Of all the trailers on Grindhouse, I really want to see the Rob Zombie Werewolves of the SS movie with Nicolas Cage.
Right. And then the other one that was used as, what was Salma Hayek's name in From Dusk Till Dawn? That's Robert Rodriguez. I get it. But
oh, my gosh. God, I don't know.
Satanico Pandemonium?
Yes.
Same movie, same name.
Really?
1975.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's what I get for looking up everything.
The more I hear about the history of movies, the more I realize Tarantino's just huge picking, fucking hack.
Picking and choosing what he wants to
I
copy.
I love his movies, stuff. But he just rips everybody off.
Yeah. All right, so
we got through a horror movie show, and neither one of us mentioned The Exorcist. What are your feelings on The Exorcist? That's how I feel about it. It's like, I just want to fast forward to the part where she stabs herself in the twat with a crucifix.
That movie is, again, the whole religious thing is really off-putting. I get that it's very, very scary, but it's just, it turns into the thing where it's just gratuitous.
Yeah.
To the point of, like...
But that's like the last 40 minutes of the movie. Like, my problem with The Exorcist is the first part of the movie does not do what we're talking about with Seven and Rosemary's Baby and movies like that.
Yeah, they just go from one and then, well, we're just jumping into it, right?
Yep, she's stabbing herself in the top with a crucifix. Okay. Like, you know, it's like, it's really, like, the first hour of the movie is pretty boring.
Yeah.
Pretty slow. And that, I don't care who you are. Like, the first hour of that movie, it's like, oh, it's just a lot of, like, walking in and out of doors, and oh, Reagan's not herself today. It's just get to it already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but when they get to it, it's effective. But that's the reason I just can't get down with The Exorcist.
And I've seen it.
Yeah.
So, and that came out in 19.
Talk about bad sequels.
73. Oh, no, I have never seen The Heritage. Have you seen The Exorcist 3?
I've seen all of them. And then there was the two. The interesting thing about The Exorcist Paul Schrader had, and then they got Rennie Harlan or somebody like that other one, you know? Bizarre. They're all terrible.
Okay, well, you had brought it up in regards to, I've seen The Exorcist, but in our segment that we have on the real thing on morelikeradio.com.
What's it called?
Finally! You know what I've never seen? I'll tell you what I've never seen. I've never seen Halloween.
What?
Before last night.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What'd you think? I can't believe neither one of us mentioned that either.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm glad that I did.
Yeah.
When I did. Because, again, it goes into the whole thing where I know enough about fucking movies to know about, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's debut.
Yeah, yeah,
and John Carpenter directed.
And he's going to keep coming back.
And he's going to keep coming back and everything else. And so I'm trying to go in with a different perspective and, you know, like, open mind. Plus the fact that I think I've seen a couple of the sequels.
Yeah.
I think I saw Halloween H2O.
I'm sure you did, yeah.
And this or that. But it's really creepy.
It's creepy.
It's creepy. I have two complaints.
Yeah.
There are...
Not enough tits. Well, I agree. Oh, okay. Wait, sorry, what were we going to say?
There is the thing that John Carpenter is doing where he's following, you know, Laurie Strode or whoever her friend is or, you know, this person or that person. And then, like, lingers on for, like, an extra, like, 10 to 15 seconds when he should just cut it right there.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, like, speed it up. But I get it because you don't
know who's watching or...
Right, exactly. You don't know if it's him or if it's...
The
other thing, too, that I was warned by Josh. It's like, oh, you're watching Halloween for the first time? Because he was talking with Brandon about it. And he's like, oh, Brandon, if he were here, he'd punch you right in the dick because he can't believe that you didn't see this movie either. But... Liberal use of the theme over and over and over.
Oh, yeah.
The main theme, not the other. The other music was fine. The other music was great. But as far as the... That's like one of the two songs... I was telling Tina this last night. Like that's one of the two songs that you learn when you're a kid and you find a piano. It's like you try to play that one and you try to play Jaws and you try to play like, you know I'm trying to...
Well, that was the level of John Carpenter's musical ability was, you know... A kid with a piano, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
you know this John Carpenter that made that music, right? Like, he made all the music for his movies.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. It's weird to see Halloween at, you know, 37 years old or whatever you are, because, like, I mean, this there really weren't any slasher movies like that beforehand. There wasn't any, the guy won't die, he keeps coming back.
In the same movie, which apparently hadn't been used before, or was one of the first that was, according to what I was reading?
Right, yeah. No, I mean, there hadn't been any of those kind of movies. Like, all the Freddy and Jason and all that kind of stuff, like, it did not exist before Halloween.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like when you hear about the car chase in French Connection forever, and then you go back and watch the car chase, and you're like, oh, okay, that was it. That's how it is for Halloween. If you've seen a million of these movies, like, you've seen tons of that kind of stuff before, and then now you go back and watch Halloween, and it's like, I'm glad that it still worked, but probably didn't work for you the way it did for people back in the day.
Well, I mean, that could go with many, many movies that you see. I mean, but at the same time, like, I can appreciate how it was made on a very small scale budget.
Yeah, next to nothing.
Yeah, and ended up making, like, several hundred thousand percentage over what it was originally made for.
Yes.
Plus, apparently, they had chosen Donald Pleasance as the third pick for Dr. Loomis, and apparently they tried getting Peter Cushing first, and then Christopher Lee, and then Christopher Lee came back and said, like, I know that I didn't do it because of the money, but I really should have done it because, you know, it's, you know, obviously iconic and everything.
Pleasance went on to make, like, four or five more of these things, you know, like, I mean, the ones, like, Halloween 4 and 5, the ones that were, like, from the 80s and 90s, like, he was in those still. Like, I remember as a kid still seeing him in the previews. I think also that he was, like, 20% of the budget or something crazy like that. Donald Pleasance. Like, he was making, like, this huge chunk of the budget they had for this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But, no, it was a good movie. I was thinking about it today, and I thought about how, you know, you read about the stuff that you're wanting to watch or that your friends have seen, and it's iconic, and it's this and that and everything else. And
this
so,
is pretty iconic.
Yeah, and everybody, like, I've read stories about how, well, obviously the killer was trying to kill these promiscuous teenagers because they're having sex, and it's the one that isn't, that she's, you know, like...
People like to paint that on it, yeah.
Right, but, I mean, it would be like, you know, Room 237 is like, okay, exactly. Listen, dude, it's the spaceship on the kid's shirt is not the alien conspiracy that you
just
think
a dude with a knife trying to kill chicks with their tits out. Like, that's all it is. Like, it's not, don't read anything into it. It's not about, you know, abstinence or anything like that.
Yeah. So the other one that I saw last night, again, on finally morelikeradio.com's The Real Thing. I've never seen The Nightmare on Elm Street.
What? The first one?
Nope.
No shit.
No shit.
Again, like Halloween, have you seen any of the sequels?
Yes.
Oh, weird.
I know, right? This made less than that, which I found kind of weird, kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, but Nightmare on Elm Street was already into the day. Like, in that little bit of time between those two movies, you had movies like Star Wars and Jaws, which made movie making, like, so many more movies came out. When Halloween came out, it was literally like one movie would come out every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So a movie could stay in the theater for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And also, the slasher movie, like, Halloween invented the slasher movie. It really did. And again, between Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street, there was 50 slasher movies that came out. So I think by the time Nightmare on Elm Street on, not taking anything away from it, because it did bring a lot of stuff to the genre too.
Right.
But people, it was sort of the bloom was off the rose with the slasher movies for people. You
know? Gotcha. Well, I mean, it still made 25 million off of a budget of, what, 2 million?
Oh, yeah. It was a huge hit.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, it launched Wes Craven and Robert Englund and Johnny Depp's debut.
Johnny Depp, yep.
Two people that I didn't realize were in this movie until I saw his face, and I was like, where the fuck have I seen that guy from? Charles Fleischer. You know who Charles Fleischer is?
Oh, yeah, he's Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Who is he in Nightmare on Elm Street?
He is Dr. King. He's the one that's monitoring Heather Langenkamp, Nancy Thomas, Thompson.
Really?
During the whole thing where he's talking to the mom
and all that sort of
thing. Do you know
she's got the leads on her head and stuff like that?
Do you know who else he is? Well, no, not that too. But he is who Jake Gyllenhaal believes is the
Zodiac
killer.
That I did know. He shows up in the very end of Zodiac, in that creepy scene in the basement with all the like blueprints and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That I did know.
The other person that I caught just on sight alone, as far as her face, Lin Shaye.
That sounds so familiar. Who is that?
Not Asian.
Oh, This is Why Does Good Sex Make Me Want to Crap?
Yeah. From Kingpin.
From Kingpin, that's yeah. Right.
And
who is Lin Shaye? She's the teacher, right? She's you need a hall pass.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, no, she's just the teacher.
She's just the teacher, not the chick that comes out. Sorry, correct. I'm mixing those two up.
And and speaking of Farrelly Brothers movies, she's also, what are you doing? That's my girlfriend he's kicking out with.
Magda.
But you just slept with me. I was only boning you to get to marry.
Magda. Well, she's in Dumb and Dumber, too. That's where they met her.
Yeah.
She was the, you know, the one with the dogs.
That's right.
She showed up for the audition for Kingpin in that outfit. They tried to kick her out of the audition because they thought that she was just some vagrant.
Crazy person.
Yeah. With this greasy, stringy hair, smoking chain-smoking cigarettes. She showed up in character.
Holy shit.
For the audition.
Speaking of auditions, oh, and by the way, Lin Shaye is also one of the main protagonists in the Insidious series.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so, that's probably where she's most known to many people these days.
Heather Langenkamp, who auditioned for Nancy Thompson, beat out more than 200 actresses, including, but not limited to, Demi Moore, Courtney Cox, Tracy Gold, and Jennifer Grey.
Crazy.
Right? And Johnny Depp, again in his film debut, beat out other actors such as Charlie Sheen, who wanted too much money. This is in what I'm reading.
Of course.
John Cusack, Kiefer Sutherland, Nicolas Cage, and C. Thomas Howell of Hitcher.
The Hitcher. Wow. That's crazy. Well, Heather Langenkamp, that chick, Nancy, she never went on to really do anything else, I don't think. I never saw her in anything else except for the third movie, and then Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Like, she's playing herself, and she's playing the character and herself. A couple of other things that I was interested in. I mean, obviously, I liked how it just shot you out of a cannon from the very beginning of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But I like Halloween more. The more that I think about it.
Yeah.
Because there's just, like, it's just really uneasy, and then, like, you know, Michael Myers is there. Oh, shit, he's not there. What the fuck is going on? And cut to credits as opposed to this, where it's just, I don't know, where it turned into, it kept jumping back and forth between, oh, the fucking boogeyman. And then he's got, like, all jokey and stuff. Like, he's the prankster that you're afraid of and you never want to fall asleep in.
If I got to choose between the two of them, I guess I'd probably choose Nightmare because I like that. I like the, like, more surreal stuff. I like the prankster. And by the way, if you don't like it in this movie, that knob gets turned way up in the sequels. Not necessarily the second one, but third, fourth, and fifth, and sixth one.
Yeah.
And obviously, we've all seen, like, Freddy vs. Jason and stuff like that. I mean, literally not scary at all. He's just making jokes and, you know, like, shitting on everything.
Puns and shit.
Yeah,
so,
I love it.
So I knocked those two off my list so I don't have to watch them ever again.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so there you go. As we wrap up on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, we're 122 in, and so we really, really appreciate your patronage. You know, obviously Halloween is more important to us than, obviously it's not more important than Hippo Juice. We hope that you're listening to Hippo Juice on MoreLikeRadio.com right now, but the last thing that I wanted to talk about, I would like to recommend another TV show for you to put on your pile of TV shows.
Jesus Christ.
Chris, and that is, well, actually, you've already seen it. You've seen Black Mirror.
Yeah. I saw the originals. I mean, the new season 3, just came out.
Correct.
I have not seen... Well, then I looked it up today, and I found out that season 1 and season 2 are 3 episodes long each.
Yeah.
So I have seen season 1 and season 2.
Okay.
So I've seen... I saw 6, but I just thought that was one season, but I forgot that the Brits do this weird shit where they're like, yeah, 3 episodes, that's a season, right?
Yeah, so we don't have 23 episodes. We gotta gorge ourselves like these Americans.
23 episodes. How many seasons was that? 7.5? No, so I've seen all those, and I saw the first episode of the third season, which was just released on Netflix.
Oh, you did see it?
I saw the first episode called Nosedive with Bryce Dallas Howard. Yeah, I watched that today.
And Alice Eve.
And Alice Eve, yes.
So I like these types of shows, because your parents were raising you on Hellraiser and The Fly and Alien and all that sort of thing. My parents weren't paying enough attention to me, so I was being raised on these type of anthology shows like Remember Amazing Stories?
Oh, yeah.
The Outer Limits.
Twilight Zone.
Tales from the Crypt.
Sure.
Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh, yeah, we watched some of those too. Yeah, I love that kind of stuff, and that's exactly what Black Mirror reminds me of.
Yeah.
I love that each episode... you know, we've got shows like American Horror Story and things like that. You know, it's like where each season is in and of itself, and True Detective and things like that.
Yeah.
I like Black Mirror because each episode is its own thing, you know? Just like what you were just mentioning, amazing stories.
Right, but as far as this particular show is concerned, it deals heavily with the technology that is currently, you know, being experienced and taken for granted by our society, which is, you know, the reason why it's called Black Mirror, because you're staring at your phone.
Right.
And the marketing
I just picked up on that.
The marketing...
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, the marketing campaign for it is really, really off-putting, too. I think Michael Kelly is one of the people that's, you know, doing the commercials for it. You can see it on Facebook or on their actual Facebook page, but it says it's the first thing you pick up in the morning, it's the last thing that you pick up before you go to sleep, and it's absolutely true. In fact, that nosedive episode, the one that you and I have seen, is pretty spot on as far as, well, we're kind of there now because we're liking stuff and hey, we're more popular. I've got 400 likes and this person only's got 4, that type of shit.
I loved that first episode. I thought it was fantastic. Maybe better than any of the episodes from the previous seasons.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not scary, it's not creepy, it's like disturbing.
Okay, that's where I was going because I've only seen the first two. I have been told that the third episode
is the best
the best one because of the kid who's acting. I plan on watching the entire thing.
If you look it up on IMDb, you know, I mean, I think the first episode's like an 8.7, second episode's like an 8.9 or something like that. Third episode's like a 9.4 or something.
Okay.
It's like obviously really, really well reviewed by everybody that's seen it.
Yeah, I've read kind of half and half as far as the second episode, which is called Playtest.
Yeah.
And it's got the quarterback guy from 22 Jump Street that...
yeah, you know what else he was in?
Uh-uh.
He is Willoughby from Everybody Wants Some.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's right! Oh, I reckon that was the beard with the beard. Yeah. That's right. He just wants to play baseball, man. He just wants to play ball.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy. You know? Just leave him alone. He just wants to smoke pot. the second one has gotten mixed reviews, at least from what I've read. I will tell you that... it is very, very good. It is very, very disturbing. And as far as certain things, you know, again, you don't need a monster to scare the shit out of yourself. If there's things that, you know, like if you've got baggage or triggers or any of that type of thing, there's a lot of shit that goes on in that second episode that's like, really, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why am I watching this shit for entertainment value? Okay, I gotta keep watching. I'm gonna put on the next queue on Netflix and all that shit. But I highly recommend it.
Well, that's like going back to the first episode of the series.
Oh, the National,
ever, which
the,
is
the National Anthem or
the
pig.
National Anthem, yeah.
Fuck the pig.
Yeah, the Prime Minister is given an ultimatum. He can either, you know, fuck a pig on TV or the princess is going to get killed or something. And that sounds ridiculous, but it's actually played completely seriously and it's really disturbing.
Yeah, and then it ended up happening.
And then he fucks the pig. Yeah.
No, like, in real life. Like, the fucking Prime Minister, like, there was some scandal involving...
Yeah, it was like a scandal. He didn't fuck a pig on TV, though.
Well,
like,
that we know of.
That we know of, yeah.
Yeah, but Charlie Brooker is the creator of Black Mirror, and I don't know.
I love it.
The show's really great. So if there is 6 hours that you can spend, I would definitely, you know, get yourself...
Nosedive was directed by Joe Wright, by the way. You know, he made Pan and Atonement and
Mighty Joe Young.
Mighty Joe Young? No.
No.
I don't think so.
Joe Wright.
Joe Wright, like, you know, stuffy British movies.
Oh, okay. That's why I don't know. I'm sorry.
Atonement was nominated for like Best Picture and stuff, you know.
Shit.
Pride and Prejudice he made the Anna Karenina movie from a couple years ago. These are all good, by the way,
if
you like stuffy British shit like I do.
Yeah, the one that I watched, Playtest, it's directed by some guy that does... Oh, shit. You know what? I take it back. The guy that directed Playtest directed 10 Cloverfield Lane. Dan Trachtenberg.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Yeah. Dan Trachtenberg.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
So there you go.
I like 10 Cloverfield Lane.
It is... I'm telling you, like, there's even a couple things in there where it doesn't break the fourth wall, but it's kind of like... I think something's probably going to happen here. And the guy's like, something like such and such is going to happen here, right? And then no.
I might watch that tonight.
Oh, man, then stay up for a little bit before you go to sleep.
How good was Bryce Dallas Howard in the first episode?
She's really good.
Like, I was really impressed. Like, I'd never seen her in anything. Like, she was in The Village, and she was in, a Spider-Man movie or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, she is super good in this, and it's all her. Like, everything depends on her performance. It's just, the camera's in her face 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, this building sense of what's going on, and everything's just not going her way, and we can all sort of, that's the thing about this show that works, is as a viewer, you can totally relate to the crux of what they're talking about in each episode. The thing that's a little bit scary and a little bit disturbing, you can kind of relate. Like you said, we all, it's the first thing we grab when we wake up in the morning, and we all got that phone with us all the time.
And the Black Mirror, man, I'm telling you. And on top of that, again, it goes back to like Tales from the Crypt. It's like those morality tales where like, hey, it's that one character flaw. Like, you, and there's someone trying to tell you, hey, don't do that because something's going to happen. I know what the hell I'm doing. Da, 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 da. Yep. And then it ends up becoming their demise or then some. And so,
bring Tales from the Crypt back. God.
They are bringing it back.
Hell yeah.
With
Are they?
M. Night Shyamalan at the helm. It's going to be an anthology series, so like in interspersed episodes that are not connected. 10 episodes in 2017 on TNT.
Please don't CGI the Crypt Keeper.
No. No, in fact...
Please. Just get Martin Landau or somebody like that to play.
Oscar winner, just dig him up.
Karloff sidekick.
Fuck you. So as we end the real thing on morelikeradio.com, again, we appreciate your patronage. Chris Whetton, as always, it is a pleasure to talk with you.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. We will leave you with Ministries. Every day is Halloween, because every day should be Halloween, because we're going to be hearing about Christmas for the next 2.5 months. But my name is Mark Nixon. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. The Real Thing. TheRealThingMLR. Happy Halloween, guys. Don't be scared.